Mr. Palmer, reel 12. We'd reached the point where you were about to cross the Garigliano, or the British Army was anyway, and you were to follow up. What do you remember of this period? It's a very complicated period.
Well, as I mentioned, of course, we were in this village. We had our billets in this village. That was battalion headquarters. And
would that be Campo?
Yes, I think so. That would be the one. And from there, there were obvious patrols that went out. Small patrols or larger patrols and so on. And we were there for a few days. The time factor just...
Would you look at the... when patrols went out like that, would you intelligence section people look at the reports and produce a sort of synthesis?
Well, yes, but what we had to do in a case, we had a larger one where either our own company or two companies carried out a big patrol, not necessarily for crossing the river, but for finding out what strength there was on this side. And the job was that we had to go out, first of all, with the intelligence officer, each of us, and we would be put at certain points along the way to guide the battalions, for instance, if it was not a straight track all the way through, but where there was a bend or something like this, or a turn off, that you were there in order to direct them in the situation that's good. In other words, a replacement for tent laying, in a sense. And you would have the sections of these companies coming through. And as each one passed through, there would be a gap. And then another one would come through, and there would be a gap. And you would see them through. Then you had to wait until you got the order to return.
No,
you didn't necessarily have to wait for them to the patrols to return, but you had to guide them to the starting
point. Now, to be able to guide them, didn't you have to patrol the battlefield yourself to get used to it?
With no man's land, that's why, of course, we would go out first of all, just at night time, just to ensure, because this was at night time. And it was important to take the enemy by surprise. I might say at this point it was highly successful. There was a lot of useful information was gleaned from that, because you got to know where the strong points were and where you could make a diversion possibly without coming out of an enemy attack.
But what I meant was you'd been out in no man's land several times before to learn the way. Otherwise,
no, just the once to go out together and be pointed out where your positions would be personally, and then you see the following night, or if it was done at early dark, you see it's at dusk, possibly to go out in the early hours of the morning afterwards. Again, as I say, I'm a little bit doubtful about that. Again, you see, we were left on our own. Now, once it had gone through, obviously there is a certain time lapse here. And I was stopped, and I pulled it, obviously, off the road and went into a little bit of undergrowth there and stood for a while. And I don't know whether I sat down. I don't think I did. I think I was still standing. I got used to standing, and you could go to sleep standing on your feet. Quite easy to do, but you have to guard against that. Anyway, it's surprising when you're on your own like that, and you're out at night, there's nobody else round and could be miles away before you go, and you've got these rustlings and all the rest of the stuff. And of course, you've got to try not make any sound whatsoever, just in case. And there was suddenly such a clonk on the top of my head. It was a nut of some kind that fell on it. I then when I realized what it was, of course, for the right, but for the moment, I was quite sick in the back.
Anything else from this period? Any other duties you had during that period? You were acting as sort of tape guide.
Yeah, that's right. No.
Anything else?
Back because it wasn't very long after that. We crossed the Volterra, the first provisional crossing had been made. And we went over and we took up our position on the other side. And again, interestingly enough, there was a lot of false crests. You see, we had gone up actually with the commandos. We'd gone to this point and we set off with the commandos and we went into our position, which was down in a little valley, surrounded by hills, with the river down at the bottom, and again, the colonel reported back that there was this question of a false crest and the map was wrong. Now, the commandos had gone through, but of course the commandos were unsuccessful in that attack that was made. And there were others went through. Eventually, I couldn't tell you who took it or what, but we had General McCreary come up. And again, this is a job, you see, the intelligence section, one of our fellows stayed at the bottom of the road, brought up to the bottom of the valley, and then it was brought up by a track. And this was where, of course, we got supplies up.
So you'd act as guides to parties up the...
Yes, we could do that sort of thing, yes, act as guides. And also, it gave you a chance to see what the greats were like.
What did you think of McCreary?
Oh, a great deal. He eventually became a Charlie Cavalier.
What was so impressive about him to you?
Oh, his complete grip of the situation of what these regular officers had was their poise. Tremendous poise in him. Whether they were, shall we say, fully in control of the situation or not, you thought they were.
What about Block? Did you see much of him, Brigadier Block?
No, very little. I knew him by sight, but I never talked to him. I never talked to McCreary, actually, but this chap in the second year. McCreary, I think he was a Scot, and the fellow that went down to meet him was a Scot as well, so perhaps that was a bit of a wise choice.
And you said that the stores would come up, food.
Oh yes, we got food up. We got a cooked meal up there. So after a bit, but of course when we got up there, McCreary came out after we settled down, but we spent the whole night on the hillside, midwinter for them, sitting with a gas cake round their shoulders, shivering, and waiting for when we will be able to move. You see, it's always a question of taking over from somebody else, possibly just pulling out. In this case, I don't think it was. But I have to make sure that our rifle companies would have to make sure, of course, that everything was clear. And we moved up into this space, and it was one of the nastiest jobs that I can remember. Is there were blown to pieces. There were two Germans had been blown to pieces. There was nothing except their bits and pieces all over. Had to be gathered together and buried under the stones. That was all we could do. Leave some record, but they had got in there. We found books. And
pay books
and this sort of thing, photographs, and these of course were sent back to the Red Cross and dispatched, and of course immediately you sort of think, well, it could be me, you know, it could be anybody. I mean, after all, it doesn't matter how good a soldier you may be if it's If you come under fire from a distance, you don't know, the enemy doesn't know who he's killed. It's not a personal battle. And you find, of course, this is one of the great things, not only have you got a rapport that grows between the people in the battalion, who may come from absolutely different theatres of life, how well they can manage to get on, because they get to learn the other's foibles, and they learn how far they can go, and they also learn, for instance, which is very important, they learn to think, well, we're all in the same boat. Doesn't matter who we are. And that is a spirit which, of course, exists in the 60s, and that's why, apart from two or three occasions, I've gone back to all the unions.
Now, well, how did it affect you? I mean, you were actually involved in picking up these bodies, or what was left of them.
Yes.
How did that sort of job affect you? I mean,
as I said, we'd had to bury somebody before, our own section, because he hadn't been buried completely to bits or anything like that. And we had to be up there. I mean, we had to stay there. This was our fixed position. It was obviously a tricky position because we were mounting guard and the enemy was shelling, and they shelled there, and actually there were two of the core signals that were killed. The battalion headquarters, they were in this, and it came straight into the cave.
Now, how did it affect your nerve? I mean, you were sat there surrounded by the evidence of mortality.
How did it affect your nerve? You've got... I'd explained how you had to get used to certain things, in a way, I'm not suggesting callously it was a water off a duck's back or anything like that. Quite differently, but you had to treat the whole thing calmly. Well, that's it, and somebody, that's body's got to be buried, you know.
What about your own nerve, though? I mean, did you find you were getting more braver or less brave as you came under more situations?
I just think you lived in a kind of on a particular level where you did neither one thing nor the other.
Do you think intelligent people suffered more? Or imaginative people suffered more from nerves?
I think they both suffered more, but I don't think they necessarily showed it more. I think possibly, when you think of some of these yobs nowadays, I think they have them around the bend in 5 minutes.
So, anything else about your time up there? Were you occupying posts, observation posts again during this period? Or was there no need?
No, we weren't.
So you were just holding the position, really?
Holding the position, but of course we were withdrawn from there, but the weather was terribly cold and bitter. And we had our little tents up, you know, the two-man tent. The triangle, and I don't know what you would call the figure, but the triangular shape one. We got to use that because that was kept the wind out and kept the snow out. But it did snow up there. It would be about March time, I think. And we were pulled out from there, of course, and were taken over to the Middle East.
When you were up there, I mean, how did that sort of weather affect you? I mean, how did you keep going in that amount of cold for that long?
Try to get pots of tea or something like that made. You can make a cup of tea in your mess tin. The most difficult thing always in the line was getting a shave. And you could only use your receptacle, your mess tin, with water. You might be able to heat it. We used to have a means whereby we could heat it. But quite often, of course, we shaved with cold water, if we could get it. You were given you were given your own mess, you would have the, you wouldn't get traffic up vehicles, but we did get brought up by what you call mules. They use mules there quite a lot, and the mule teams came from they came from Africa.
And how in these periods would you fit in with the rest of battalion headquarters? Where would they be in relation to you?
Just there, all together.
Who else was there then? There'd be the signallers.
The signallers. Not your dispatch riders, because of getting the motorbike truck. But you would have company runners, this sort of thing. And the runner was his job to carry messages, where this was the only means of doing it, to carry back to his company or whatever, if he was at the town headquarters. You've got odds and ends like that. Oh, you have as a part of the regimental police. Not the military police, the regimental police.
What about the support company? Would they be based there or...?
No, support company, usually you see support company consisting of transport, brain gun carriers and that sort of thing.
So they wouldn't be even up there
they
at all?
They wouldn't even be up.
What about some of the more prominent officers of the thing? Just now, perhaps to discuss to know, what did you think of someone like Vizard at the time? Then. Would you know them and recognise them?
Oh, well, now Vizard became a company commander. What is he saying?
I think it was even before that. What did you think of him?
What did I think of him?
Or would you not meet this?
I thought he was a good officer. Well, in my contact with the officer, I think I mentioned Major Johnston. He was quite an officer. I mean, the regular officers were very good. And, of course...
Sherlaw, Collins?
Sherlaw, yes. Collins, yes. He had his own little nickname.
Winker.
You've heard that one, haven't you?
Alan Hay?
Oh, yes.
You thought they were all pretty good, then?
Yes, well, you see, another job that I got as well, I'd forgotten about this, round about the time of Monte Camino, they wanted the troops to be put in the picture. So they used one or two members, not all of them could necessarily have done it. They used them to present an overall picture of the way the bat is designed, so that the ordinary soldier didn't just feel he was out on a limb, that he was part of something very important and very big, and that his work was vastly important. So you gave snippets from the news bulletin that you were allowed to give, of course. And they were little lectures, and then given to platoons.
And you'd give them?
I would give them.
And prepare them?
And prepare them, yes.
And what was the response? Were the men interested, or...?
Oh, I think you have to take it with a little pinch of salt, and they were grateful that somebody was interesting enough not to just consider that they were cannon fodder. I do think things like this are important. But I don't know, there's always a fair amount of cannon fodder.
Now I think the next thing is when you pulled out of the line and went back to Lavaglia and then off to the Middle East.
Yes.
When was your first inkling of this?
I couldn't tell you. Honestly.
What do you remember of the journey?
Nothing. Except when we got to supporting the head of the
port side.
When we went down the Nile, anyway, went down in trains, you know, these 20 men to a wagon or whatever it was. And you had various stops going down. Of course, these Arabs would be there with their eggs and the rest of it. And of course, he'd not had anything to eat for a while. I remember we got some of these eggs. I wouldn't ever do it again. And I felt really ill by the time I got to base camp. I spent the night in the MO's tent. It was all right the following morning, but that was unbelievable.
So you went to El Qassassim camp, I think. In Egypt.
Yes.
And how did you feel about getting away from Italy, getting away from the shooting war, so to speak?
Oh, well, you feel relief. But on the other hand, it's surprising how easy it is for a kind of boring to sit in. You say, we got 3 days leave in Cairo. And I remember going to Cairo for 3 days.
What did you think of Cairo?
Well, again, all the various people about with trying to sell you something, you know. The Arabs would meet you at every corner they could. One of the chief ones, by the way, were these urchins who used to come up to you and say, shoes, whatever it is you've got on. And they had a nasty habit. If you sort of said no thank you, they would flick your boots, you see.
With shoe polish?
Yes. And flick it with a shoe polish on the end of a leg or brush. Sorry, that wasn't quite clear. And I remember one day getting hold of one of these in the shop. Just in the doorway and getting a hold of it by his neck, chasing him off, and I thought afterwards, you know, it could have been a dark sight worse.
Did you go? Would you go to the tourist spots out to the pyramids or anything like that?
Yes, we would take. I had a guy. What do they call him? Abdelman? No. But he acted as your guide and he took you to various places where, of course, you could spend money.
What was it like for a... You hadn't been out of England before now.
No.
And then to see the pyramid.
I'd never been abroad until I travelled.
I mean,
Day 1942.
Did it mean anything to you to see the pyramid? Or, I mean, was it sort of...
Oh, yes. Yes, here is one of the seven wonders. Yes. Oh, yes, it did. And we climbed up, the one that went inside. And, I was quite impressed. We didn't do a great deal. We weren't there all that length of time. Because it was very shortly, we moved to Palestine.
Now, there's two parts of Palestine. There seems to be some training, and the other part was some civil defence thing, in the sense of controlling trouble between the various factions of Jewish and Arabic populations. Were you aware of the situation between the Arabs and the Jews?
Yes, very much. The heavens were involved in it. Not personally, but we were involved in this because... Tel Aviv was the place out of the Jews were blowing up a whole lot there. And of course the not so much the Jews, but you see they were coming in their dozens from abroad. It's a terrible situation. They were being pushed out of Russia and pushed out of Germany and pushed out of the countries of Europe. And they were obviously fairly tense there. I mean, some of those that have become Jewish heroes, and we would recognize now, they were in the Ergo or whatever it was.
What was your role? What was the battalion's role?
The battalion's role was helping to keep the peace in Tel Aviv.
How did it do that?
Well, I did reasonably well.
How would it go about it?
Oh, well, simply being there and being there on guard.
Was there any patrolling?
Yes. Now, we didn't. I didn't do it, but the companies did patrolling.
And was there an intelligence role in this, for the intelligence?
Not really, not that you would. No, I don't remember.
Would you give lectures on the situation?
We didn't there. No. We waited. There we were at a place called Lithania, and all that we were told to do was that both be concerned about the jackals, the real jackals and the human ones, because we were told we had to sleep on our rifles. And so that is exactly what we did. We slept on our rifles. But we eventually, you see, we had a day of piper. You could have I remember drinking pure orange juice, which had been squeezed and had absolutely glorious to get Jaffa oranges. Yes.
Did you see much of the Arabs? Because there was also a problem with the Arab population, which had died down a bit by then. Did you have much contact with the Arabs?
I had no contact at all. We were supposed to keep out of it.
Did you have any sympathies with either side yourself at the time? Not now.
Not really.
Now, the training was when you were near, I think you moved to Air Rama. I should have mentioned, you went there at the end of February 1944. That's when you went to the Middle East. You were there till June, I think, end of June. Do you remember much about the training? Because there were some special schemes and some special work on infantry tank cooperation. Were you aware of any of this at the time? So what do you remember about the near Tiberias, that is, near Lake Tiberias?
I remember we were only a matter of half a mile to a mile away, possibly, from Lake Tiberias, and you could walk down there and walk back, and that was part of the habit, because Italian headquarters was in one of these large these large tents from the canteen was there, and some of everything was there. And one of the things that I had to do, you see, this is the kind of thing, finding you a job where you're not in the front line, is to send you to whitewash the stones from that Italian headquarters.
Did they really do that to you?
Oh, they did do it to me, necessarily, but they did do that.
And what would you be doing? You weren't training. What were you doing?
Don't think we were doing anything very much.
Do you think you had an easier life, in some ways, in the intelligence section, than, say, a rifleman would have had?
Probably. And, of course, yes, I suppose that's true.
Out of the line, I mean.
Out of the line. Oh, yes, out of the line, definitely, yes. Yes.
So anything else before you went back? Because you went back via Qassim again. And
Italy. We went to near Damascus. We had a day in Damascus. And I can remember killing scorpions on the floor of this before we moved into Damascus. We were out one night on this, and it was just sort of sandy deserts and these scorpions were around the floor. Not very pleasant. We spent quite a lot of time. Then we had a day in Damascus, and then we moved over, and I can remember Beirut, having a day in Beirut and being very impressed with Beirut. I thought it was a lovely city, and I thought it was green compared with a lot of the desert inland. Oh, we also went to one or two famous Roman remains, which I can't think of the name of now.
And then back into Egypt.
Not one of the Romans, I can recall.
It's at this
I was very impressed with the Sea of Galilee. That's